Welcome, Green Future Growers, Progressive Radio Network listeners, and anybody who's new to the show. I'm your host, Jackie Marie Beyer, and let's get growing. Welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast today. I am just thrilled to introduce my guest from North Dakota, who's going to talk to us about no-till farming and soil health. And we talked a little bit before when he did an interview with me, so I know you're just going to be, I know he's got lots of valuable information that you're going to love. So welcome to the show, Steve Sedera.
Thank you for having me, Jackie.
Well, thanks for being here. Do you want to tell listeners a little bit about yourself?
Well, I, like you said, I'm a no-till farmer. I've been farming for over 40 years on a grain farm, western North Dakota, eastern Montana, kind of right on the border. And in the 80s, we were going through some drought, and I was tired of watching the soil wash away when we did get rain. I was watching and tired of watching it blow away. And so in 81, we made our first no-till pass, and that was with a rented drill that our soil conservation district had purchased. And then in 82, I bought my own drill, and we started no-tilling. And like I said, we were doing it for wind and water erosion. Then by the 90s, we started in, and we had really created a monoculture situation doing wheat on wheat on wheat. So we had to start into a rotational aspect. Our first rotation was field peas, and that helped tremendously. And then probably towards the mid-90s, maybe a little bit further, I was introduced to a guy on a research farm, Dr. Dwayne Beck. I became a student of his, basically. He's still on that research farm today in Pierre, South Dakota. And he started diversifying our rotations, teaching us how we needed to add similar to what's in the prairie. So we started adding a more diverse rotation to that, meaning warm season grasses, warm season broadleaves, rather than just cool season grasses, cool season broadleaves, and stepping that up a whole notch, getting the intensity up. He taught us how to utilize the whole water profile and not just use the top 4 feet of it, because a lot of our nitrates were going to the bottom of the profile and we were leaving them there as well, which at some point in time probably goes into water tables and into water systems. So there's some healthy things there as well. But then about 4 years ago this month, it actually was 4 years ago, I was at a conference. I was there for a different reason, and I mentioned something I'd been thinking about doing for the last several years, and that was teaching gardeners how to take the principles that I've learned over the years of no-till and applying it to gardening. And so I went online, did some searches. There was very little information about no-till gardening. In fact, there was hardly any 4 years ago. And so I was kind of out there by myself, not doing a lot of things. Did some suggestions that people did. And it started out as a container situation. The first one failed miserably. So I knew that I had to establish a different media mix. And then about 2.5 years ago, we mastered that, probably closer to 3 years ago. We struggled about the first year with the container thing and did lots and lots and lots of
testing. What do you mean by a container thing?
Container gardening indoor, Jackie. What they wanted was like the grow boxes, earth boxes, that type of scenario. But they wanted me to build living soil indoors to take that environment that I got going on outdoors and bring it indoors. And the whole idea was to do it indoors and teach people how they could garden year round. Well, the first thing I did is I went out in one of my fields, actually took a bobcat out there. We ended up out there for like 3 or 4 days at different times, trying to figure out how we were going to capture this soil. At that time, it was 34 years of continuous no-till. But the problem was every time we would dig beside it to try and capture a, like a 12 inch profile, it would fall apart on us because the soil was so alive and so crumbly, had so much activity in it that it wouldn't stay together. If you take like soil that's worn out, you can dig down beside it and it'll stay in a slab. If you take living rich soil, it wants to just crumble. So I was 12 inches deep and the soil was still crumbling apart on me, but we eventually accomplished that, got that box, built a box around it out in the field, lifted it out with the forks on the bobcat and stuff, got it out of there, brought it indoors, and it failed miserably. That soil indoors, it's just made to be outdoors. So we had to establish a media mix that'll work for raised beds as well as container gardening. We've been able to do that about 3 years ago and apply the principles that we use in the no-till scenario of building nutrient-rich living soil, but doing it in a container and making it so that it'll survive. So it's just kind of evolved from there, Jackie. We work on a lot of testing things yet. We're always improving things, but we have a lot of things that are going on here at Tabletop Farmer in that era where we can teach people how to thrive. In 2015, we did go outdoors. There was a lot of demand. People wanted to know, how can I take this outdoors? I mean, what can I do? So I started looking for people that we could take gardens that were just completely wore out. Probably one that sticks in my mind is what I called Sarah's Little Angels. It was a garden that had been tilled for years. It was so infested with weeds that it was just unbelievable with the weed growth. We applied our no-till principles. We did do a fabric barrier on that, used our, developed a watering system to water the roots and our natural fertilizer system that we started out. And it was an unbelievable project. The neat part about that whole project was that it was 18 by 80 feet long. We didn't pull one weed in it all summer. That was the amazing part about it, is that we didn't have any backbreaking work to start it, and we didn't have to pull any weeds. So kind of a long answer to your short question.
I'm kind of confused about a couple of things. Like, for starters, who's we and what's Tabletop Farmer?
Well, I've had help. Tabletop Farmer is who it started out as a container gardening where we could garden on your tabletop. So that's my label that came by itself. I labeled myself as the Tabletop Farmer, and it expanded outdoors from indoors as well. And the outdoor side of it is that we can garden outdoors, naturally grow nutrient dense produce, and do it all naturally without any soil amendments, without any backbreaking work, and bring it to your tabletop. So that's the tabletop side of it. As far as we, I have help. I have friends that help out. I have my hired man that I have on the grain farm sometimes gets stuck doing some things as well, which they kind of enjoy. We worm farm here as well. We have commercially do worm casting so that we can build our natural fertilizer. The reason I started that, Jackie, is because I wanted a consistent product. I wanted to know what I had, not something that somebody else was shipping in, if that makes any sense. Primarily because I wanted the grain that we were feeding them to be a natural grain. I didn't want something that was maybe something that had a pesticide or something in it. So even though worms will break that down, but I wanted an all natural product. So when I tell people it's all natural, it really is.
So what all are you growing?
Well, we grow about anything that in these featured gardens, what we would grow is we would go through the corns. We learned that there were certain wind loads in certain areas with the prevailing winds. So we would plant corn on those outside areas to help break the wind. Then we would do zucchini. We would do lots of tomatoes, pumpkins, you know, so we had pumpkins for the kids.
How big is your place again?
Well, some of these feature gardens we did for like a year or two. Unfortunately, the property on Sarah's Little Angels got sold. So, and it was kind of a spur of the moment by the lady that owned it. So that project went away, but we are starting what we call Serenity Farm and Garden. And that I own. It's a spot out on some property that I own as part of my farm. And we've purchased a high tunnel this summer to do some high tunnel testing in as well. I don't know if you're familiar with high tunnels, but they're those tarped like buildings that look like a Quonset. They're fabric where the sun can come through. And there's a huge demand for those in this area right now and in lots of other areas, because you can garden longer in the frost areas. You can get in earlier and go longer in the fall. So,
and it also helps keep like pests out and helps you regulate your water a little better, I think.
Well, yes, I have a friend on a Monokan farm to the east of us, that has a high tunnel. They've been doing it for about 5 years. I'll be a student of Jay's as well. I use him for a lot of references. There are mistakes that can be made. Of course, lots of mistakes, and he will help us avoid those, but it's like anything. There's a learning curve to it. Not everybody's going to be able to go out and purchase a high tunnel, but they can purchase small greenhouses if they want to do that as well. There's real small versions of them that you can do as well.
And there's a program that you can apply to from the, oh my gosh, what are they called? DNRC or whatever, Department of Natural Resources.
Yep.
We applied, but we didn't get approved. But one of these days, I think we will.
Sure. And there's a lot of, it's interesting because I've ran into church groups that try to do gardening and they're interested in this approach. Naturally, we have to get it up and do the training and stuff to teach them how to do it. But I see a big benefit for like community gardens, simply because I don't know how familiar you are with community gardens, but the one that I'm familiar with turns into kind of a big wreck every year with certain things that happen to it. But I think the high tunnel thing would be beneficial in community garden settings and
sure,
stuff.
That's a great idea.
Yeah. So there's a lot of avenues we're running with this. It might seem like we're running all over the place, but I am a soil. My title is, I'm an expert at building and maintaining soil health. And I've been able to do a lot of gardening things simply because I'm good at making things grow, because I know how to build soil health.
And you're doing it on a bigger scale than most people I've talked to are doing it at, right? Because like your original place is like, did you tell me like 12,000 acres or,
well,
or some like outrageous amount?
It isn't quite that big. We've got, we're not a large farmer in this area. You know, a large farmer is several thousand acres, which we're a couple thousand acres. But what we've done, Jackie, is we have honed in on those and we become more niche orientated. We do some value added crops. We raise some things like garbanzo beans, and we're able to produce those. And today I have buyers that are waiting. They're calling 30 days before harvest telling me that we have a bin open for you. You know, we're ready to, whenever you get this off, we have space available for you. That's pretty unknown for that to happen. Generally, you harvest, put it in your bin, and then you have to look for somebody to buy it. So it's a real good feeling, but they know that we're capable, depending on the weather, of course, that we're able to produce a high dollar crop or a high quality crop for them that they can trust. We have a lot of that with lentils. I got a call just the other day. Actually, it was a text message from a buyer wondering if I had white prosel millet, because they were looking for some, because they know that's part of my warm season rotation. So we've evolved where we've probably, we used to farm a lot more acres, and we've scaled back with that and become more niche orientated, more specific crops, and do a better job. And quite frankly, the bottom line gets better for us when we do that.
Awesome. I know listeners are going to love to hear these kind of things, because niche oriented and more profitable sounds good to all of us on less acreage, because a lot of people don't have a lot of acreage. Like, did you say, like, how big is the place?
It's a couple thousand acres, but you know, your market farmers are on like a quarter acre or something like that. And they're, pushing the production side of things there as well. There's a lot of things we can learn on that area. I've been studying that as well, trying to figure out ways that we can build better soil health for them as well than what they're doing, because I think that we need to, our whole focus is for people trying to build so they have a nutrient dense crop. I mean, that's, we want the nutrients back in that plant is what we want. That's our goal.
Well, that's what we want to eat. I know that's what I want to eat. So, and I know listeners are interested, like, how they can do that. So, Steve, I do always kind of start the show asking about, like, what was your very first gardening experience? Like, did you grow up in North Dakota on a huge ranch? Or, like, who were you with? What'd you grow? Or, like, was it when you were adult or a kid? Or, like, what was your very first gardening farming experience?
Well, actually, my first experience was with my mother. I mean, as a little guy, I watched her garden. She had a very large garden, a garden that was fenced because of other things that were out there that they were raising, meaning livestock and chickens and that sort of thing. So I can remember Dad taking the fence down on the one end and having to come in with like a four bottom plow behind a tractor, and he would plow it for her and overturn the soil, and then she would plant into that. But what I do remember is my mother coming in just being totally exhausted from working in that garden. I mean, it was kind of her therapeutic thing as well. But I looked at the labor that was involved doing that, and of course, when we would get out there in it, we would do something wrong or something. She'd show us some things, but she was very, very, very specific on the way she did things. She had a pattern that she done things, and that's the way it was. So I didn't spend a lot of time out there helping her, but I watched the work that she did. And quite frankly, Jackie, that turned me away from gardening somewhat, because I saw the labor that was involved with that. And I thought, you know, that's a second job. I mean, it's crazy. So, you know,
at least a second job, if not a full-time job.
Yeah, exactly.
So then, how did you learn how to do your no-till permaculture type of gardening farming?
Well,
from studying that Dr. Beck?
Yeah, well, I actually, the no-till thing came relatively easy out in the field, but then to move it, like I talked earlier about moving it into an indoor setting, was tough, much tougher than outdoor. And I can't say indoor we have a total no-till system right now, but we have a system that we can renew the soil by the same methods as what the soil is built underneath our feet. We've developed that system so that you never have to buy new potting soil ever again. Outdoors, it was relatively simple. I basically just started with it, and I started thinking about different ways that the raindrop falls. If we think about raindrop falling on cement, it has that splash effect. And it does the same thing when it hits hard soil. It splashes, but what it takes with us, and this is what they teach inside of our no-till farming, when it splashes, it carries soil up with it. Those spores hit our crops, and that starts disease. And I thought, well, gardening's got to be the same way. So the first thing I did is I built a garden with armor on top, which means the insulative layer or the cover. And I'm not talking about, you know, compost or anything like that. Although you can do that. In my world, we got to be careful that we don't get too much compost on top, because then we start other issues. So the armor layer is just basically a layer of carbon on top of the soil to insulate that top layer. Then I start thinking about how are we going to water this. I really don't want to sprinkle it, simply because we have chlorines in the water, which rainwater doesn't have, and we're going to have issues there. And I visited with other gardeners. So then I started thinking about a soaker system that I worked on and tested that worked very well, that we actually put in the soil, not on top of the soil, but we have methods where we install that and put that so that it irrigates the roots and it's on a timely manner. The interesting part about that whole process, Jackie, is that we were able to use about 70% water watering a garden that way versus conventional sprinkler methods. So
that makes sense.
Well, but in some areas that's really powerful, because you get in areas, well, even areas like San Diego, where water is so limited. I mean, good water, although they're surrounded by oceans, you know, the water that's usable, I mean, there's certain people that are actually saving gray water now to water gardens with and stuff. There's systems set up for that. So that's where, you know, I just took the systems that I've used outdoors over 30 some years and kind of brought them full circle around and used them gardening. And the neat thing about gardening is we're able to, what I call, put that on steroids, because we're able to speed up the process. We can see results in 30 days or less by applying just a few principles of this system. And the reason being is because in a farming scenario, we have like 4 to 4.5 months of growing, and then we have the rest of it that turns into that wonderful thing called frost and cold and snow and everything else. Then we have to come around and wait for the next season to try it again. Where gardening, there's a lot of things we can do to speed up the process. We can build soil health much faster in a gardening scenario than I can out on the farm.
So what's like one example of like how you're doing that, or like where would you tell listeners to start?
Well, the first thing is the best way to start next year's garden is in the fall. The fall preparation is no different than our farming. I just did a newspaper article for a farm and ranch guide, and I was actually on the cover of it with my stripper header showing how I keep the residue on top of the soil. If you think about gardening, everybody's concerned about what they look like in the fall. They want to tidy them up. They want to make them nice and neat so they look nice and clean, and they haul everything off to the landfill. What they don't realize when they haul that off to the landfill is they're hauling away the best part of next year's garden, because all that residue is filled with trace minerals that will benefit next year's plants. Plus, there's probably some nitrates that are tied up in that as well that are units that that plant would use as it breaks down in the soil and goes into the soil profile to feed next year's crop. So if I was to say anything right now at where we're at in this given time, it would be don't haul stuff to the landfill. Use that for this year. Use it for next year. Start this year for next year.
I love that. I totally think soil health is the way to start. Well, how about something that grew well this year? Or was it chickpea, garbanzo beans?
Probably our pulse crops. If you're looking at the farm, we're still in a drought. We went through the 30-year drought cycle in 2017. This year, we're still in that. Our profile was basically empty, meaning we didn't have any water reserve built up in our soil. I have a probe that I can go down and push in, and it'll stop when you hit dry ground down below. It's a really neat probe. It was built by a guy years and years ago, but it's interesting because we want at least 2 feet of soil moisture before we plant in the spring. That way we know we're going to be able to have enough to get the crop going, and we're going to need some rains in between then. This year we were at best at 18 inches in the spring, and we got some timely rains, not a lot of rain, but it shut off right after the 4th of July. It was just like we turned the faucet off, and about the third week in July, it turned hot. So we had a nice crop coming on. Some areas were really good, and then when it got dry, of course, it started going backwards. But probably some of the best things that grew, yeah, we had garbanzo beans in an area that were very good. We had some lentils that they were okay, and we had some durum in some areas that did very well as well.
How about, so what are you excited to try next year? Like, is there something new or different?
I'm excited to get our high tunnel going. We're actually building soil right now indoors for that as we speak, meaning that I started an interesting project. It kind of came by accident through a conversation with a guy. He threw some plants out one time in the fall, and he threw them in some tires, and the ones that were touching the soil filled up with worms. The ones that didn't, of course, didn't. And he was wondering what the attraction was. And I said, well, worms are always looking for living roots, or they're looking for that fungi or those sugars that the plant roots emit through the exudates. And they're always hungry for that. That's their natural food. So I was going down the aisle in a store one day, and I saw a whole shopping cart, maybe even two or three shopping carts, of expired plants that they were throwing out. And I got about halfway home, and the light bulb came on, and I said, whoa, wait a minute here. So I called that store. I was actually able to dig those plants out of their dumpster. I told them I was going to ask them if I have permission to do that, and they said, have at it, they're going to the landfill. So I took those plants out, and we brought them in here. We started a project called the Ultimate DIY Potting Soil, and we named it that after a while. And we've taken that potting soil, and we have a system where we vermicompost that. It took us a while to develop, to learn how to do it. There's a certain kind of worm that works best with that. It's a very fussy worm, but it's like the piranha of the composting world. And we did lots and lots of testing. And today we are building potting soil. Like I said, we're building potting soil right now. I have bags and bags. It's amazing what you'll get when you ask, because I started asking for these plants that were expired. And there again, I think the hired men were probably not very happy with me when I showed up with a dump trailer full of plants, and they have to be depotted and the tops cut off. And then we throw those in these big totes, and we keep them outside. And then we just bring them in, add water to them, and go through our process again that we do indoors. But we're going to have all natural soil. So now what we've done is we've taken that soil, Jackie, and we've been planting over and over and over and over in it, see if we can wear it out. And it keeps getting better and better. It's kind of amazing what happens to it. As long as we keep that process going, and we don't have to go to the store and buy any new potting soil. Pretty cool.
Cool. So what are you adding to it besides the plants? Like, are you putting like what typical people put in like compost, or are you doing like the hugelkultur method, or like how are you turning it into dirt?
We're actually not adding a thing to it. We have some, I have a, like I told you in the beginning, I have a worm farm that I do commercial castings with that I actually build. We call it super soil. we actually have, and we don't have a website tied to it, but we have a domain called getsupersoil.com. Someday there'll be something there, because we're still a little bit in the testing phases. But if you've ever heard of endomycorrhizae fungi, I've learned a lot about that through Dr. Beck out in my farm field. And the only way we can build that, the fastest builders are the warm season crops. You can do it in your garden. We're going to do some testing down the road with that as well, to where we can teach people how to build the endomycorrhizae fungi. The issue is that when people till, they cut that off. It ends its life. It's done. Tillage just ends the life of endomycorrhizae fungi, because it's root extenders that extend through the soil, basically, is what it is the way I like to envision it. I have found a company that builds that organically. It's all natural product that we can add to our super soil. So we have endomycorrhizae fungi in it, and then we have a micronutrient package that's all natural that we mix in with it. So that if we're missing a few trace minerals, we can naturally add these. These are organic products that are produced, and we can blend that with, so that we make a super soil product out of it. Sometimes we mix a little bit of that with it, simply to just give it that extra boost. But as far as your question, I have bare boned it. I have taken this soil and I have not added anything to it. All we've done is put it through our vermicomposting process that we've developed. And I wanted to see if we could just keep using this stuff. And you want to remember that what living roots adds everything to the soil. Mother Nature provides everything for us, Jackie. She's done it for centuries, but we've forgot about it. We think we have to go to the store and pull something off the shelf, or buy something, or go to a garden center is the only way that people are taught to grow stuff right now. And Mother Nature has been excluded out of this equation. And my mission is to bring her back into this equation, teach people that it's been here all this time. Take a snapshot of the prairies. Dr. Beck taught me this. Take a snapshot of the prairie that's been there for centuries. If you take a snapshot of that, there's over 137 species of different grasses and plants that you will find depending on where you go. And in that, each species does something different for that soil. It helps to build that soil health. It helps to recharge that soil to keep that plant growing. That prairie never has anything added to it. It's self-sustaining within itself. That's what I'm trying to teach people that we need to do.
So how about something that didn't work the way you thought it was gonna this season?
Well, the first thing was that if I take my soil out of the field that is 30 some years old, and it's gotta be the best thing that was ever born, you know, indoors. And it, like I said, it failed miserably. And primarily the reason it failed is because it dried out. Indoors, you know, we have commercial heating systems and stuff. And in the wintertime, it was just, it's tough to keep that hydrated. And it eventually turned, you could keep watering it, you could keep doing all kinds of things to it. But, and looking back on it, I think there was ways I could have made it work. But now, I wanted something for people that they could go to the store and buy something one time. And there's three components to the media mix that we've got, actually four. There's four components to this media mix that we put together. And when they do this, we can teach them how, so they never have to go back to the store again if they keep the system going. And you know, life gets in the way at certain times. I mean, there's things that get forgotten about, and that's understandable. But once the process, even if you mess up and forget to do one of them, or you say you you go on vacation or whatever. And we've got automatic things that we've been working on as well to keep the process going, like the watering and the lighting and things like that, so that that process stays intact, so they don't get overwatered, they don't get underwatered, they have enough sunlight, the proper type of sunlight or artificial light, I guess is what we're referring to, so that that process will keep going. But even say that something happens to where you're gone, whatever happens, you become where you can't take care of it for a while, you can come back and fix it, if that makes any sense. It's easy to fix and easy to get it going again.
Cool. So like, and people would be doing this like either in one of those hoop houses or a greenhouse or in their basement or in their kitchen. Like, did you say, where is this happening?
Well, there's a variety of ways that we, what we're teaching. We're teaching ground level gardening, where this spring in January, we'll have our first course coming out, which will be entitled Your First No-Till Garden. Before that, we're going to release a soils course. We hope to have that out here sometime in, it's probably going to be latter November because we've gotten pretty busy, but I want people to understand the soil science, why, what's happening within the soil and why they're doing what they need to do with the soil. It's soil biology can be a boring topic. It really can. I've sat through a lot of things with the Extension Service that you look around the room and everybody's nodding off to sleep because, I mean, it's just kind of the nature of things. It's not an exciting, sexy topic. So we've worked to bring that a little more exciting, to bring, you know, so that it's a little more, not entertaining, but short and simple and have a good understand. Yeah. Short and simple and interesting so that they can grasp it quickly. And they need to have that so they can understand when they go out in the garden, yeah, this is why I'm doing this. You know, this makes sense. Why we need to do this. Some people will need that, some won't. So, but back to what we're doing, our goal is to be able to garden on a shelf, like on a four-tier shelf where they can have it on wheels and they can roll it around. And if they want to grow some herbs or a little bit of lettuce or whatever the case may be, maybe even some root crops in that, they can do that indoors. We can do larger containers if they want. We can do elevated raised beds for like nursing homes. We've talked about that. We have some people that are actually doing some of that now. But the key is learning how to keep that soil intact so that they don't think they have to be digging that soil out all the time and replacing it with new stuff, so that when their plants aren't growing, they know what's going on. And then, of course, there's the outdoor ground level gardening thing and the raised bed gardening out there as well that can be done. We can take a garden that people have tilled for years, teach them how to turn that into a no-till garden real simply. Where they can park their rototiller, they can park their hoe, they don't have to do any more fork amending, no more double digging, no more adding soil amendments to the soil. And if they want to do some sort of small hoop house, we're not there with that yet because we don't have our high tunnel up, but we do know a little bit about it. So we know how to do what we need to do with soil in there as well. So there'll be a variety of things that we'll be able to do, but it all comes back to the soil, Jackie. We have to take care of the soil. We have to get that nutrient cycling process going within the soil.
For sure. Before we get to the root of things, let's take a minute to thank our sponsors and affiliate links. The Organic Gardener podcast is sponsored by Health IQ, an insurance company that helps health-conscious people like redners, gardeners, healthy eaters, vegetarians, and green future growers just like you get lower rates on their life insurance. Go to healthiq.com/OGP to support the show and see if you qualify. Over half of Health IQ customers save between 4 to 33% on their life insurance. These savings are exclusive to Health IQ customers because physically active people have a 56% lower risk of heart disease, a 20% lower risk of cancer, and a 58% lower risk of diabetes compared to people who are inactive. Health IQ uses science and data to secure lower rates on life insurance for health-conscious people just like you, green future growers. Like saving money on your car insurance for being a good driver, Health IQ saves you money on your life insurance for living a health-conscious lifestyle. To see if you qualify, get your free quote today at healthiq.com/OGP. Or mention the promo code OGP when you talk to a Health IQ agent. Hey, Green Future Growers. Did you get your copy of the Organic Gardener podcast, Garden Journal, and Record Keeper? One of the things that I've learned to be most beneficial for my guests that will save you time and energy is to keep detailed records of your garden journey. So I think I finally found the secret and made a garden journal data keeper that starts any day of the year because you just fill it in. It's blank. There's no calendar. So you just, it's got the days of the week. You can record temperature, freeze dates, frost dates, when you planted, what variety you got, all in one place. So get your copy of the Organic Gardener podcast, Garden Journal, and Data Keeper today. And now let's get to the root of things. So Steve, we're actually at the part of the show that I call like getting to the root of the things, which is like the lightning round. And actually I do have another interview starting at noon. So we're going to kind of pick up the pace here just a bit. Yep. So like, do you have a activity that's kind of like your least favorite? They got to force yourself to get out there and do in the garden around the farm?
Probably, I can't say there is, Jackie. I love growing things. I love installing things. Gardening really, really excites me today because I know the end result. So I really don't have anything that I dislike about it. I think unfortunately,
inspiring to listeners.
Yeah.
So, and because you're sounding like you're making it, like my listeners know I'm really into convenience and like low, like actually my husband does 90% of the garden for me and he'll like be like, here, I made you a new bed. Come bring your little seed packet down. And like, that's about the extent of what I have to do to get ready. I mean, besides the fact that I do love making the compost, but, what's your favorite activity to do in the garden? Like, what do you love to get out there and do the most? Is it, I think kind of maybe being creative and trying new things, but.
Actually, I love moving residue out of the way and seeing what's going on below the surface. That's what really excites me, to find out how that, to see that soil change. That just, there's, for me as a soils person, that is probably as exciting. You know, I can look at what it does to the plants. Mm-hmm. I mean, we had 4.5-foot tomatoes in 7 weeks. In Sarah's Little Angels, after the hailstorms let up for us, we had 4 hailstorms. We ended up transplanting again the last time, the middle of July, like the 18th of July. And I'm thinking, oh my God, you know, we're not going to make it before the frost hits. In 7 weeks, they were 4.5 feet tall. I mean, it was crazy. So, wow. Yeah, they did very well. But that's what excites me is the soil.
How about the best gardening advice you've ever received?
As far as what I've received, probably, I don't know. I'd have to think about that. That's an interesting question. I really don't have an answer for you for that one.
Okay. Well, if you think of something before we're done. How about a favorite tool that you'd like to use? Like if you had to move and could only take one tool with you, what could you not live without?
Probably my watering, that's the key. I need to have my lines for my watering because that's what makes it work.
So are there any special techniques to putting those in? So you're talking about like watering things that go under the dirt?
We put them in the soil. Yeah. We have a process that we teach of how, and then we actually put our super soil in with that as well, so that plant gets off to a good start, because a a lot of what we've planted in is soil that is completely worn out. So we want that thing, and we've planted seeds and we have done transplants both. It just depends on what you want to do, what you want to grow. One thing we've struggled with is finding good seed. That's been our biggest issue, is finding good seed. And we've recently uncovered some things that are pretty exciting that I think are going to be a real game changer for us in that seed development thing.
So do you have any videos on like YouTube or stuff? I know listeners are going to be really curious about all that we're talking about today.
We're in the beginning stages of that, Jackie. We've just got our channel launched here recently at Tabletop Farmer, and we will be posting things there regularly now. Right now it's empty, but we've been busy working on a couple of projects here this fall. So my farming business drags me away from this too much, and we're changing that as well, getting some key people in place there to assist with that. So there will be a blog that's going to have lots of information at Tabletop Farmer, as well as we'll have a YouTube channel. We also have a Facebook page that we'll be working on more.
Huh. Okay, cool. Well, make sure you send me the links to all that stuff that I can put in the show notes.
Absolutely.
Do you have a favorite recipe you like to cook or eat from the garden?
I love oregano in the wintertime in chicken noodles, or not chicken and rice soup. That oregano, just you take naturally grown oregano and put it in that soup, and it just adds a flavor to it like nothing else.
Hmm. I'm a big oregano fan, and I have oregano coming out my kazoo. But I thought, as an Italian, basil and oregano are like two of my essential. They have to go in everything. So,
The other thing is, I can't eat the garlics that are in the powder that form that you add. And if I raise like the garlic in the garden with the little green stems and stuff,
yeah,
and the green stem onions and stuff, where you make natural chives out of it, natural garlic chives. That just seems like I don't have any issues eating that. So I love that stuff too.
How about a favorite internet resource? Like, where do you find yourself surfing on the web?
I mostly find myself searching for people that are testing. I'm interested a lot in what they're doing with the composting. Because I compost in my garden. I don't use a composter on the side, although it's important. It's part of the process of getting this going, especially for raised beds. It's essential for getting it going. But once you have this process going, you can kind of park that other composter. Unless you have things on a regular basis that you like composting, then by all means, keep it going. But
I forgot. Did we talk about Patty Armbruster before? Did I tell you about her? Have you heard of her?
I don't think so.
You should. I'll make sure I send you a link, because she's actually on the east side, probably closer to you. She's in Hinsdale, which is like northeastern Montana, up on the Highline.
Okay.
And she talks a lot about a lot of the things you're talking about.
Yeah.
How about a favorite reading material, like a book or a magazine or anything?
I have a couple soils books. One's by Dave R. Montgomery, and it's How to Bring Our Soil Back to Life, or Bringing Our Soil Back to Life. And I love his material. I have a close friend, John Sticka. He's wrote a little soils book as well, and that one is called A Soil Owner's Manual. And I love books about soil.
John Montgomery, is he from Seattle and like has a wife?
No, he's actually from Dickinson, North Dakota. John Sticka. It's STIKA.
No, the Montgomery guy.
Oh, Montgomery, Dave Montgomery. He's from Oregon. He's over at Oregon. Yeah, him and his wife, Ann. David R. Montgomery.
Yeah, I did. I'm sure I interviewed him.
Okay, yep.
I'm trying to find it.
I have him set up.
And I talked to his wife too, I think, separately. And, but I think he has been at like a super downloaded episode. Yeah, The Hidden Half of Nature. And Bickley, right? She wrote The Hidden Half of Nature. And then he wrote the other soil book. Yeah. He's been downloaded a lot. People are really interested in his work. Let me see. Back to my questions. So, because we only have 2 minutes left, I'm just going to go to the very end. So do you have an inspirational tip or quote to help motivate listeners to reach into the dirt and start their own garden?
Don't till. When you till, you kill. That's the simplest I can get. And it sounds so simple, but yet that urge to till is always there. Don't do it.
Well, I got to say, you're not the first one on this show. The first one on the show to talk about that was John Moore. And I was so nervous. I was like, wait, what did you say? Don't dig. But since then, I've learned a lot about it. So I'm glad that you were here to share with us today. I'm sorry I have to go. We'll have to reconnect because I know you said you wanted to have some questions. Make sure you send me some links to all the things about the Tabletop Farmer and your Facebook group that we can connect with. And thank you so much for sharing with us today, Steve. I know people are going to be interested to see your videos when you get them up and see how this stuff actually looks in person, because I mean, I know there's some stuff out there, but like you said, there's not that much. And I haven't heard anything about a water system underground. I like that.
Yeah.
I got to go though. I got to start this other call. So thank you so much.
Thanks, Jackie, for your time.
Yeah. You have a great day.
We'll talk soon. You too. Bye-bye.
All right, bye. Links. The Organic Gardener Podcast is sponsored by Health IQ, an insurance company that helps health-conscious people like redners, gardeners, healthy eaters, vegetarians, and green future growers just like you get lower rates on their life insurance. Go to healthiq.com/OGP to support the show and see if you qualify. Over half of Health IQ customers save between 4 to 33% on their life insurance. These savings are exclusive to Health IQ customers because physically active people have a 56% lower risk of heart disease, a 20% lower risk of cancer, and a 58% lower risk of diabetes compared to people who are inactive. Health IQ uses science and data to secure lower rates on life insurance for health-conscious people just like you, green future growers. Like saving money on your car insurance for being a good driver, Health IQ saves you money on your life insurance for living a health-conscious lifestyle. To see if you qualify, get your free quote today at healthiq.com/OGP or mention the promo code OGP when you talk to a Health IQ agent. Hey, green future growers. Did you get your copy of the Organic Gardener Podcast, Garden Journal, and Record Keeper? One of the things that I've learned to be most beneficial for my guests that will save you time and energy is to keep detailed records of your garden journey. So I think I finally found the secret and made a garden journal data keeper that starts any day of the year because you just fill it in. It's blank. There's no calendar. So it's got the days of the week. You can record temperature, freeze dates, frost dates, when you planted, what variety you got, all in one place. So get your copy of the Organic Gardener Podcast, Garden Journal, and Data Keeper today. Hey there, green future growers. Would you like your friends and neighbors to create an organic oasis too? Would you like others in your area to learn about earth-friendly practices for their gardens and yards? If so, we would love it if you would share the Organic Gardener Podcast with your local community or college radio station today. Thanks again for listening, and remember, grow local.